Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined as always by my good friends and radio celebrities, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. Big R, you are really living the dream life of the church planner and conference speaker, man. I mean, really just the dream that everybody endeavors to in this business. You are holed up in beautiful Pittsburgh, PA, which I'm guessing is gorgeous this time of year, in a Homewood Suites, aren't you, baby? Is this everything you hoped it would be?
I think it is. I think, you know, there was a moment there when we were doing our how long was our pre-prep today? 43 seconds. Did you count, mm-hmm. Piper?
Yeah. So there was a moment. 46 if you include us looking on Wikipedia for stuff.
Gosh, yeah, that's right. I was going to try to get that count right, and I knew I screwed it up by a few seconds.
Fact, but always checking. Some mundane detail, baby.
There is. But man, yeah, there was that moment when we were pre-prepping, which half of it was talking about my time here at the Homewood Suites.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it's a great feeling being here, just, you know, really, you know, imprisoned in a luxury, you know, residential suite, you know, waiting to attend a conference tonight in Waterdam, Pennsylvania. It really is living the dream.
Well, listen, I hope you realize how fortunate you are, because there are a lot of church planners out there dreaming of that self-same thing. So,
absolutely. And I don't take it for granted, even for a second, Big T.
Baby, listen, you enjoy every moment. Okay.
I'm enjoying. I mean, to even think that I could broadcast a show from the Homewood, you know, I mean, the whole thing.
Yeah.
And when
you take
the whole thing as a collective entity, it's mind-boggling and overwhelming.
Plus,
as a frequent traveler, I'm really impressed that the Wi-Fi at the Homewood Suites is allowing you to do this.
It's incredible. Yeah,
that's
incredible.
But maybe they want to sponsor an app or two, baby. You
can, well, they actually gave me my own Wi-Fi because they knew who I was when I was coming in. So
your own Wi-Fi, wow.
Yeah.
They hand you a little like router as you check in.
The Wi-Fi is called Ronnie Martin. Yeah.
That's the VIP Wi-Fi.
Right.
I love it. Well, gentlemen, we've got a little bit more of a compact show today because of our various commitments. So let's dive right in, guys. Barnabas suggested a new segment that we're going to debut today called Unpopular Opinions. And the idea here is that we just pick a category. So one time it might be food, it might be celebrities, it might be books. And we just give each of us an unpopular opinion, because we all have these things that we carry around that we know are sort of against the grain. We know that most people would disagree with us. So I want to kind of be in the interest of being authentic, just get the ball rolling and get these out here. So, today, boys, the category is books. So we know that a lot of our listeners are very literate, thinky people who read a lot of books.
They read a lot of Wikipedia.
And I know that because of their end of the year blogs, which say all of the books they've read for the entire year.
No. They only say the top 35 books they've read this year, implying that they read at least twice or three times that many.
Exactly. So, boys, what are your unpopular opinions on books, man? Let's start with you, B-Pipe.
All right. Well, I'm going to start us off with one that it might qualify me to be kicked out of the church. I'm not positive, but I'm going to go with the Harry Potter series are better stories than the Chronicles of Narnia.
Wow.
Oh, ayo.
Piper,
let's
think about what you just said. Let's think about the implications of that, because that's there's a lot of wizardry and witchcraft now that you have just introduced
wizardry.
To the Happy Rant.
In fact, there is an academy of wizardry and witchcraft called
that's
Hogwarts.
What I'm saying.
Yes.
Are you are you advocating wizardry, Barnabas? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
I'm advocating Well, first of all, the Chronicles of Narnia doesn't just have wizardry and witchcraft. It does have both, actually. But it also has something called deep magic. So you've got like multiple layers of magic there. So as long as we're being consistent, let's point that out. No, what I'm advocating for is stories that are not sort of moderately well-written allegories of the gospel ending in a very weird tale of people walking into a shed, but rather a cohesive story that kids absolutely love, that adults absolutely love, that exhibits many of the best qualities of life, and it's just – it's a really fun read. Like the Chronicles of Narnia are not a fun read. They're simply not.
Interesting.
They are a read that Christians like because they're Christian books. They were like –
They're allegedly a fun read.
Yeah. They're a read that we are required to think is fun.
Yeah.
That's what they are. That's if we lose listeners over this, guys, you can excommunicate me. But that is my unpopular book opinion, and I will take on all comers on Twitter on this one. Not to argue with you, but just saying, send me your feedback. But yes, Harry Potter as a series, better stories than the Chronicles of Narnia.
Wow, baby, that is outstanding. Way to get started.
Yeah, I don't even know where to go with that. Other than, really, I agree. I think with at least 9 out of your 10 points you just made. Piper.
So I didn't know I was making 10 points, but
I don't know. Right. I don't know how to count sometimes. I'm not a math
pastor
guy,
but, math. Yeah. You inflated it. That's
but you are a reformed pastor, meaning you number all of your points. So,
I only have 3 points at the end of every sermon, obviously, but, I should probably bump that up to 5, right?
Absolutely. Really, baby. You need to be going, listen to me. You need to be going for at least an hour if you're going to call yourself a true reformed sermon. So
it's true. I went 54 minutes 3 weeks ago. It was the longest I'd ever gone. I thought half the church was going to get up and quit on me.
Wait, you preached for 54 minutes? Did you take the next Sunday off because you preached 2 sermons?
Yeah, I haven't preached for a month since then. I told him I needed that much recoup time. Absolutely.
Guys, you want to know something, man? You want to know something crazy? Just vis-a-vis these church trends. So I listened to a Tim Keller sermon from 1994. You know how long it was?
25?
18 minutes.
was it a sermon at a church? That's a TED talk.
A sermon at a church in 1994, man.
That's his church? That was Keller's church?
His church. I assume it was on his sermon podcast, you know, lineup or whatever.
Tim Keller was the original TED talk artist.
He really is. It's true.
Dude, but here's the thing. It was a great sermon. You know what I'm saying? It was really tight. It was really good. I don't know. That's all I'm going to say about that. But it's just an interesting, I think, commentary on the trends. But we're getting off topic.
We are. And Ted, I'd like you to go next, man. I'd like you to go next, because what I'm going to say is going to really – I'm going to lose my place on this podcast in probably evangelicalism after my comments.
So you go first. You boys have both set the bar really high. And actually, Pipe, I was actually going to go in a similar direction vis-a-vis not really caring for Lewis and Tolkien, which is like double heresy within the church. But since you kind of took that one and you did such a nice job with it, I'm going to talk about a genre of books that we all had to read in middle school. And I'll use the title White Fang. Did you guys read White Fang?
Jack London's book. I think I read that when I was like 10 and thought it was so magical when I was 10.
I bring this up because I was having a talk about relationships with a college guy here at the prestigious university where I teach. And he was referring to the White Fang phenomenon in terms of relationships. And you'll recall at the end of White Fang, where it's one of these stories where, like, in order to do the best thing for the dog that you've just gotten attached to for the last 200 pages, the owner has to sort of meanly turn the dog out into the wilderness for its own good. You know what I'm saying? And this guy was he was explaining that he had to white fang a girl in a relationship.
Wow.
He had to get rid of her, but it was really for her own good. You know what I mean?
I love that phrasing. It's so awful. White fang.
So maybe you've had to white fang someone in a relationship, and if so, that would be really sad. But the point being, it reminded me how much I hated all these books, all these friggin' depressing novels that we had to read in middle school, where they get you attached to the dog and they show you what an amazing companion the dog is, and then they kill it off or they have it get lost at the end. It just rages me out.
Yeah, I think it's easier to name books where the dog does well. It's easier to name books where the dog dies than where the dog does well.
Like, yeah, there's so few books where the dog
does. There's Sounder. There's Where the Red Fern Grows. There's Old Yeller being the classic. What else do we have? White Fang. The entire genre. And they're kids' classics.
One day I'm going to write a book where the kid becomes really good friends with a dog, and then he just gets to have a long life with him and keep enjoying him.
And then the kid gets turned loose into the wild and the dog gets the house.
Yeah, the dog has to turn the kid loose into the wild.
Take the kid out behind the shed.
What about where the kid just dies at the end instead of the dog?
How about nobody dies? Nobody gets white fanged. Nobody dies.
You're just saying happily ever after.
Can we back up to having to white fang somebody in a relationship?
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture the person for whom that's like a cultural point of reference.
Yeah,
They picked a relatively obscure Jack London book. Now, granted, I mean, it sold a lot of copies, but it's not exactly a New York Times bestseller today. And they use that as their point of reference for breaking up.
Dude, whatever you're picturing, it's probably right.
Okay. Well, that's all I'm just going to let my imagination run with this because that kid is he's something else.
Because this kid might be a listener. Like it's probably like 60-40 that he's a listener.
Yeah, right, sure. That's just what I was thinking, man. He's already on the Ted Cluck tip right now. He's been following you for years, man.
Absolutely.
Did you offer any correctives to him or did you just sort of, you know, you just sort of went with it?
No, I loved it. I thought it was incredible.
You just sort of shrugged and said, well, at least you didn't Old Yeller her.
Yeah, exactly. It could be worse, right? It could be a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Ronnie, you're up.
Yeah, you know, I hate to even go here. So, you know, at some point, I should probably just let the listeners know that at some point, if you hear Barnabas just slamming the phone down in anger, you know, that should be expected.
And by the phone, you mean just all the high-end recording equipment that he has in his studio.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, yeah. People don't understand the kind of technology we're working with.
I actually keep a rotary phone with me just so I can slam it down.
Because
pressing the buttons on touchscreens is not as satisfying.
It's a mix of digital and analog technology that we use here on the podcast. People need to understand that. But what also people need to understand.
Dude, and the analog fans are going to love that from you, man.
They are. They're going to like it. They're going to like that I'm still dabbling in that world, but this is what my reformed friends are not going to like, and I've only told very few people this. I think Big T, you're one of the people I've told this. Wow, but man. There is a book that has been sitting on my shelf for many, many, many years. It's been picked up, attempted to have been read many times, always put back when I get to chapter 2. And it's a book that I like to refer to as Desiring God.
Oh, wow.
Well, I haven't read it either, so I can't say much. I also attempted to read it several times and then realized I think I just would rather talk to the author. It's easier that way.
I think you have – correct me if I'm wrong, Pipe, but I think you have the benefit of that.
Yes, it's a thing that I can do.
You know, it's funny. So here's my experience with it is that this is interesting. And so it sounds a lot – describing it like that makes it sound a lot worse than it is. Because, you know, obviously I'm a huge JP fan. I'm a reformed guy. I have to be. It's just in the cards. It's part of the – it's part of your – you know, it's part of your – you know, what makes you who you are in this world.
Absolutely.
So having said that, and to make this as uncomfortable for Barnabas as humanly possible – it's not that I disagree with the book on any level or any point. It's just that I feel like I've had so many people talk to me about that book. I've seen it quoted. I've quoted parts of it so many times that I feel it like when I start reading it, it almost feels like one of those things where you want to go back to it, but you almost can't go back to it because you've already read it.
Mm.
And it's the weirdest thing for me because I almost feel like I'm almost somehow disqualified doing what I'm doing because I've never read that book. It's like second to the Bible as being like the most the most mandatory reads, you know. And for some reason, even in seminary, they didn't make me read that thing. And so I don't know what it is with that. But I'd love to get a little feedback from you boys. Again, Barnabas, I have no clue what this is doing to you right now. But Big T, I don't even know if you've read it.
Dude, I have. And listen, have you already given your talk there at the Homewood?
No, not yet.
So you haven't given the talk. You haven't been paid. Baby, I wouldn't be surprised if you got a call from the conference director just saying, you know, Ronnie, we heard your recording today. Through the walls of the studio, and we just think we're going to go a different direction for our talk. So,
guys, you know what? A text came in. They canceled my sesh, so we can extend the podcast.
Stinking Homewood. They said that was an encrypted Wi-Fi line.
That's right. They said Ronnie Martin network was secured. I don't know. I don't know what happened.
I guess here's my question, boys. I'm a reader. I read like an animal. That book has been,
you know, animals struggle
difficult.
With literacy, right?
Sometimes they do. Not the. I'm a cat guy. They don't.
Oh, you're thinking of like C.S. Lewis's animals.
No, dogs struggle with literacy. Cats don't. That's why I'm a cat guy. My point is that I've tried to read Desiring God. I just can't seem to do it. That doesn't say anything bad about the book as much as it says something bad about me. Let's do some commentary.
Let's back off this whole judging ourselves based off of other people's opinions about books. I don't think it makes you a bad person to not have read that book. To me, based on my completely objective observations of these things, Desiring God has reached a similar place to a book like Knowing God by J.I. Packer.
Right.
Which is a book that influences all the people who influence other people, but most people nowadays are not, you know, avid fans of it. So,
that was one I had a real tough time with, actually, Knowing God. It didn't do anything for me.
They are classics in the sense of, like, man, that was a really important book back when people read it.
Yeah.
But right. I don't think you need to feel bad, Ronnie. I'll serve as a proxy for the author here and just relieve you of that burden.
I mean, obviously I don't feel bad. I only feel bad because I'm afraid you might feel bad. So that's why I just kept saying I felt bad. But you know,
there's not a lot of things people can say about my dad's books that make me feel bad. And for a couple reasons, one is I don't care. And two is I haven't read most of them. So I have no idea if what people are saying is true. I've read a few of his books. So,
yeah.
So yes.
Anyway, but you know, so you guys get what I'm saying, though. As a dude, as a pastor, as a reformed guy that's strictly in the John Piper camp of theology, it's just one of those weird things that's hard for me to explain to guys. Because I even recommend that book to people that have read it, enjoyed it, and they want to dialogue on it. And I go, yeah, let's listen to you dialogue about it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's one of those things where when you write JP, you would be like, you know, I'm normally a huge fan, but ... Right?
Yeah, that might even be too harsh. Again,
similar
maybe
to that dynamic
that
we discussed last week. Well, boys, speaking of liking things and speaking of, you know, what to like and knowing what to like and sort of going public with the things that you like, kind of unrelated to anything. It wasn't a main point last week, but we've all three, I think, expressed at least some degree of fandom for some of the work that Kanye West has done in the past. You know, we all talked about records of his that we liked and some of his artistry that we appreciated. And we got a letter, not nearly as funny as the one that we read on the air last week. It was actually, really articulate and respectful. Not that the other one wasn't.
But it kind of wasn't.
Yeah. But this guy very, I think, wisely wanted to know, so, okay, Kanye's music is full of, you know, all this controversial stuff, all the language, all the misogyny. How do you sort of decide to like something like that? Which I thought was a really insightful question. So I'll throw it to you guys.
Gosh,
I think,
yeah, go ahead.
I'll go ahead and jump in and feed the sharks first. I think that, in appreciating just about anything, whether it's any sort of art, music, performance, sports, whatever, there's a certain level of segmentation that goes on in terms of you can appreciate aspects of things without appreciating the whole. You know, so it's the same reason I can enjoy watching certain athletes play who are not good people. And they do some pretty abhorrent things, but their performance on the field is transcendent. Now, music's a little tricky because it's lyrics and there's the lyrical message, but there's also the lyrical art form and all of those kinds of things. But I think you can appreciate the talent and the expression and the artistry of something without condoning the message. And I think how you express that is something too. Like, I don't jump on Twitter and post all of the things that I appreciate because I know that there's something that will offend other people. And so I try to be somewhat careful about those things. But I think you can appreciate many aspects of artists or athletes or whatever without appreciating the whole and without endorsing the whole.
Yeah, I agree. Big R, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's on point. I mean, I'm with you on that. I mean, I think narrowing down what Piper just said, you know, I mean, to even call myself a Kanye fan is probably taking things to a place that I don't think, you know, I would even go. In as much as I can say, hey, I heard a song or there was a particular record that kind of struck me. And again, whatever sort of provocative nature that he chooses to sort of use in his writing. You know, I'm not necessarily drawn to things of that nature. I think for me, especially when I'm listening to a genre that I don't typically love, you know, hip hop's one of those genres. I'm more of a production guy. So it does go back to what Piper was just saying. I'm listening to how he mixed the record, what kind of sounds he was using, what kind of tones he used. And because there's a production aspect to what all these hip hop producers are doing that was very much sort of similar and in line with a lot of my old production. And so I, again, yeah, I can listen to it on that level, but to even say that I'm a fan, I think is way too strong, because he's not an artist that I go after. He's not, you know, I don't have his whole back catalog. And yeah. And I think you can be, I think you just have to use discernment. You know, I think enjoying something from an artistic standpoint doesn't mean that you have to become a mouthpiece for it either, you know? So, yeah. What do you think, Big T?
Very pastoral of you, baby. I appreciate
that.
Yeah, no, for me, I mean, I always choose music that makes me feel a certain way. And I think.
So you're emotions based with it then?
Dude, I'm totally emotions based.
I mean, that's music in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, music is supposed to make you feel something.
I think it is. I think it is. And I remember hearing some singles off that record, The Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, the one that I talked about last week. And yeah, I just really liked them. And I was actually, this is sad, I was running like seniors track and field events at the time. Like we had this summer track and field series where like adults could do it. And I was running sprints and I would always train to that record. And I feel like it was really good for that. Like it got me in a certain frame of mind, and I enjoyed how it made me feel on that level. But the thing of it was, and this kind of speaks to the listener's question. I really did, after a while, after lots of like the same kind of workout, listening to the same record, like it really did get me down on one level. Like there was a lot of the content that, you know, I don't know if guilt or conviction is the right word for it, but yeah, I just felt. I felt sort of dirtied by it on a soul kind of level. And that doesn't mean I threw the record away. I didn't make the big sort of, you know, freshman in college flourish of like burning all my CDs or selling them, which was a great way to get records at Taylor University where I went.
Go find all the people who just got saved again.
After they would do the secular music.
Get all their Aerosmith records.
Yeah, it was a great way to score records. But no, I didn't do any of that. But I kind of pulled it out of the rotation and now I listen to it just very sparingly. So
here's a question, kind of digging a little bit deeper into, because I think this is probably the crux of the question, because the way it was asked wasn't like, how could you guys listen to that? It was much more, how do you choose when and how to listen to things like that? So Ted, you expressed positive, you know, positive feelings about that, but then after a while it began to wear on you to some degree.
Yeah.
And is that an indication that you should not have listened to it in the first place?
Dude, that's a great.
Or are there things that, because of the sort of the nuanced nature of how we enjoy them, we can only take them in doses?
I think it's more the latter. You know, I think for me, I didn't feel like, you know, this deep sense of, you know, I have to confess to the Lord and my accountability partner that I listened to a lot of Kanye West for a little while. So I don't think it was a sin issue. I think for me, it was more of a wisdom issue and more of just this isn't who I am. You know, this isn't, you know, constantly sort of, you know, downloading this kind of information and this kind of like worldview. It's just not who I am, you know, and it's not, and what's more, it's not who I want to be. That's not to say throw it out, throw it away. I mean, there's still so much of that stuff that I enjoy.
So is it a little bit like eating habits, you know, ice cream is delicious, but if you ate a pint of ice cream every day, you would probably feel awful about yourself and be really unhealthy. But mixing it in every now and again is awesome and we should all do it.
Dude, I think that's a really solid analogy, actually. Like, I really enjoy ice cream once in a while, but I, like you said, I would not enjoy it every day. It would make me feel horrible. So, yeah, I think that works.
So hip hop is Ben and Jerry's, end of story.
It's auditory ice cream. There you go.
Amen.
People are going to be disappointed because I think, you know, people always want to know. They want to know boundaries. Like, they want to be told, you know, this is okay, this isn't okay. And it, interestingly enough, Pipe, you'll appreciate this, I think. Like, I feel a lot less that way about, you know, an artist like Public Enemy. I feel like I can listen to that as much as I want and it doesn't give me the downs. You know what I mean? It doesn't it doesn't bum me out. It doesn't make me feel like low grade guilty, you know, but I think that was before, you know, hip hop got really sexual and really misogynistic and really.
Yeah, there's a distinct difference. Like if you go listen to, like, Tupac is my favorite hip hop artist, and I am not up on most new hip hop. Although I will say that Kendrick Lamar's performance at the Grammys was one of the best things I've ever seen. But that's a separate point. You should look it up. But there was a difference in hip hop at a different, you know, it started as civil rights music, and then it was message music, and right. it slowly morphed into sort of narcissistic, clubbing, misogynistic music. And I think there are periods of hip hop where there's better poetry, there's better message, there's better everything, even if they are profane, they are sexual, and you have to be careful with those things. But right. the underlying message of it is better.
Yeah. Agreed. Well, boys, let's close with something that we almost never talk about in this program, and that's politics. We are heavy in the midst of an election cycle here for the presidency, and there's a lot of wild kind of opinions being thrown around about people, and I have to come clean on something. There was a time, a very short time in my past, where I pretended to be sort of the Christian who's into politics. Like, I wanted to take on that persona for a little while and see if it would stick, because I kind of thought people like that were cool. But the fact of the matter is, I really, really don't care. Like, there are so many things I care about way more than who becomes the next president. So I have to preface this by letting you guys know that you're going to be doing most of the heavy lifting on this topic. But
I think your attitude carries over into why we don't talk about politics on this show very much. And I must say this, it's not an intentional decision not to. It just never comes up when we're talking about, you know.
Dude, it never comes up because there's so many things we care about way more than it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I would rather argue about Harry Potter and the Chronicles of Narnia ad nauseum than talk Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. But we try to give the people what they want, as Jalen Rose says on his podcast. So
dude, and he's really the auditory mentor for all of us. You know, I mean, really what Jalen Rose is doing is kind of a great blueprint for what we want to be doing.
Yeah, I think we should just follow in his footsteps
in life and on the podcast. So Big R, you brought this one up, and you brought it up more in the context of like all the hand wringing and like sky is falling.
Yeah.
Ness of people looking at this election, specifically looking at Trump and Hillary, and going like, if either of those two clowns gets elected, I'm gonna like flee to an island in Canada. And your point, make your point. I think this is a really good word for any sort of Christian in the midst of an election cycle. What were you trying to say?
Yeah, I just always, because you know, I'm not a political guy. You know, I never have been, and so I'm always a little, you know, there's this idea that we as believers, you know, we are putting our trust in the one who we believe is actually, what the Bible tells us, is responsible for putting world leaders in place. And so I feel like if we actually believed that, then every 4 years we wouldn't do this sort of this self-assaulting that we see, where like everything's going to hell in a handbasket. And even beyond that, just the shock and the awe and the surprise that seems to just kind of like explode outward by candidates doing things that all candidates have always done. And of course, given sort of the times that we're living in, are going to be able to do with much more frequency and much more applause, and with much more, a sense of, provocativeness, if that's a word. If it's not, I just made it up. But so I just think, like, why is anybody surprised at Trump? Why is anybody surprised at sort of the audaciousness of, like, you know, some of the things that are coming out of both sides of the campaign? And then it just turns into sort of this heightened fear. And I just think, like, you know, and again, to simplify it, and I'm being very, very, very simplistic here, but I just feel like the sun has never, like, risen and set for me, or been dependent on who's sitting in the chair in the White House. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, that's being very simple about it. But I can be too apathetic about it. So I'm not trying to say let's not care at all, as much as to say let's care about it in the most biblical way possible. which is just saying, man, there's somebody else that is in control. And if we can set our trust on him, who we believe, of course, is God, then I think we would approach this with a little more security than it seems like we do. But I think
you can expect a text message coming through from your conference saying, you know, after that last comment, we might let you back on stage because that little sermon more than redeemed you.
Either that or they're kicking me out of the denomination. I don't know. You know, I don't know where we're at with that. But, you know, we're not Baptists, so maybe I'm okay. But, yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Because, guys, I feel like this every four-year thing is just – I literally feel like I just need earplugs, you know, a year before the election. Basically, every 4 years, it just – it becomes like white noise to me.
To me, my perception of people's response to it is that it's high stakes reality television. That's how people respond to it. So like if you're on Twitter during one of the debates, Republican or Democrat, doesn't matter, the way that people are going after it is I have certain friends who watch The Bachelor and I have certain friends who watch the debates. They are the exact same Twitter streams about completely different things, which should tell you something. Like this is being played for the media, and people's responses to it are falling into that. And that's not saying that the presidential election doesn't matter, because it does, obviously. This is a governing body and, you know, running one of the most powerful countries in the world. But I think the thing that people need to look at is our response even remotely reasonable? Mm-hmm. I mean, have we completely lost our minds? Look, it, I would venture to say a fair number of people have completely lost their minds because Trump is currently leading the Republican nomination, and that's an indication that we're all crazy. But losing our minds about that is somewhere between unbiblical and stupid. I'm not sure where. And so I don't know. I look at it and I go, why are we responding to this with the same sort of like sort of trite response on the one hand and like losing our minds on the other hand, that people respond to The Bachelor or to these other whatever reality TV shows? That's what it feels like to me. And I feel like telling people that if you have a response to this, there are level-headed, reasonable, well-thought-out, well-considered ways to do it that will likely have a better impact. And the other thing is none of those things happen online.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. But let me ask this question. Do you think part of it, though, is that because we have sort of grew up in that whole like religious right, sort of that, you know, that focus on the family, that uber, you know, Christians need to be, you know, entrenched in politics. We stepped away for too long. We got to get in that sector now. We got to make some waves. We got to make our voice known. So like I grew up in that. And so that became so distasteful to me that I think what I've done is I've pulled back to the point to where I look at it and I go, well, I don't want to be in that class or that category of people that are just so concerned about things that they actually don't get to change. And that really actually puts them in a position of losing, to me, the credible part of their voice rather than actually having something to say at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. And I think the religious right aspect of things it's polarizing no matter what, because it either sucks people into that vortex, which is like the flushing toilet, or it drives people away because they want no part in it. And so like I would tend to be more like you guys, where when all this stuff goes crazy, I just sort of back away and go, you know what? I'm going to go watch Justified on Netflix because it's way like I don't come away from that crazy. It's way more entertaining. And the same thing is going to happen tomorrow, whether or not I watch this debate and lose my mind or go watch Justified.
Yeah, I'm going to go read some Harry Potter, not C.S. Lewis, and amen. I'm going to just enjoy myself.
Yeah, I'm going to go read Harry Potter to my kids. That's what
I'm
going to do.
Don't be real careful what you're saying now, Barnabas.
Dude, just don't read them White Fang. It'll bum them out. They'll get super depressed.
They're going to go dump somebody because they read White Fang.
Just, you know, just add some Love Comes Softly in there every once in a while and you'll.
Wise words.
Well, I think we solved the political thing. So listeners, you're welcome.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We really
I do. I feel a peace now, and I feel like really any questions that anybody's had about Trump or Hillary. I feel like we answered those, didn't we? Have we covered those bases?
Well, here's another quick thing. I feel like some people forget this. Everybody who is going to move to Canada, if Trump wins, Canada is a semi-socialist nation. And so if you don't like Bernie Sanders, you probably don't want to move to Canada either. And I'll just stop there.
Right.
I don't know. I just don't really want to move. Is it okay if I don't move no matter who?
Baby, you stay there in Ashland. Ashland is like its own sort of municipality in that I think a Democrat being in office like makes no difference there.
Yeah, don't worry. I don't think it'll matter. And they're never coming to Ashland, so you're fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are your own thing, man. You're a self-contained unit there.
I feel good now. Thanks for affirming that, guys. I feel like I can sleep now through the elections.
You just put on your American flag sweatshirt and sit out on the front porch.
Listen
once
to
in
some
a while.
Lee Greenwood.
Yeah, listen to a little Lee Greenwood. Baby, have you ever done this? One of my favorite things to do when I go to visit a new evangelical family whose house I've never been in before is see how long it takes to find the Ronald Reagan biography.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it's always like on an end table, like sitting under a lamp, but it's always there, you know?
And you know what the new thing is now? You know what I've noticed now? And I'm going to get in big trouble for this one. But it's not just the Ronald Reagan biography. The new school version of that is finding one of Bill O'Reilly's killing blank blank books.
Oh, yeah, man. If they want to go really edgy, if they want to really be out there about what it is that they feel.
Yeah, killing Lincoln, killing Jesus, whatever the names of those books are. Yeah, that's killing what I feel like softly. Is littering the end tables of.
Yeah.
Killing Me Softly was – that's a really – O'Reilly nailed that one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, boys, we've done what we often do on this program. We've wandered to and fro, and as always, the gentlemen from Resonate Recordings have made us sound like the best versions of ourselves, which sometimes is not saying much, but we appreciate it anyway. And guys, we need to let Big R go and be famous and live the dream there at the Homewood in rural Pennsylvania. And Pipe, I need to go meet with a student about screenwriting. So,
well, see if you can mix in some White Fang references.
I really will, man. I'm going to talk about a film adaptation of White Fang. I think it has to happen.
I think there is one already,
dude. There is, but it's probably super depressing. In my version, the dog and the main character will just stay friends and be together. So,
hey, and Piper, I don't know if you know this, but they made some film adaptations of your beloved Harry Potter series too. So.
I do. Also, I've heard about also that. Better than every film adaptation of every C.S. Lewis thing that has ever been attempted.
Well, you know what? Nobody in the world could possibly argue with that.
Yeah, no, that's just points in my favor on why Harry Potter are better stories than the Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes.
There you have it, folks. Controversy, as always, here on the Happy Rants. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
Finding uplifting news in today's headlines is often like searching for a needle in a haystack. At the Story Behind podcast, we believe in the power of finding heartwarming tales and are happy to share empowering stories with you every week. Hear about how Steve Harvey surprised a dying man on Family Feud with $25,000. Get inspired by the note a waitress received from a patron dining alone. And even hear about how one VIP passenger made a hardworking pilot get emotional before his flight. To start listening to the Story Behind podcast, visit lifeaudio.com or search Story Behind on your favorite podcast platform.